You're listening to the 405 Exchange Podcast. My name is Ken Grandpierre, and today's episode is with Joya Beving. The idea of an album that harkens to classical music being popular in 2018 sounds almost impossible, and yet here enters this brilliant Dutchman. In 2015, he released a debut album, which was a contemplative body of work that grew popular thanks to streaming. And last year, he released his second album titled Prehension, which proves that he still has so much to share with the world with his skill and his desire to grow as an artist. I got to learn about his story while he was in New York a few weeks back, and we go into why he never expected to have a career in music and how he found himself creating such albums and how his life has never been the same since. This is the 405 Exchange with Joya Beving. Enjoy. So what's really cool about being sat with you is that your story is quite an interesting one. And for those listening who are unfamiliar with you, can we go into how this career started for you?
We can. It started, I'd say, officially started in 2015, but a little before in the summer of 2014, I started to sit behind the piano at home, and I had bit of a, well, not a, it was, let's say, life got a little busy for me. So I had to take a pause, and the piano was like the perfect escape for me and seemed to provide some form of comfort and basically calm me down. And music started to present itself that I felt really good about, but in a kind of a weird way. I never played classical in my life. I'm not saying what I do is classical, but it definitely hints towards the vocabulary. At one point, I thought it would be a good idea to actually release the music. And let's say a couple of years before, I would have never had the guts to bring out this simple music, but it felt really good at the time, and and I just thought it was something I always wanted to do, maybe like a bucket list thing, to have at least one printed vinyl with your own music to have in the cupboard. Yeah. And so I did that next to my work, and I went to one record label that didn't show any interest, so I took my daughter to like the Chamber of Commerce, set up a little record label just to release my own music.
Yeah.
And I made sure that, while that's relatively easy nowadays, the music was also on different streaming platforms. Hmm. And there it got picked up at one point. That's where it basically started, which was, let's say, October, November 2015.
Wow. And you know, something that was interesting for me when I read up about you, I remember I read a piece The Guardian did about you, and if I remember correctly, the label rep that eventually signed you heard your music within the setting of a restaurant, like, yeah, kind of in the background, and then was kind of compelled to hear more and find you.
But it was even better. It was 2 a.m., Berlin bar, dark bar, where they only play vinyl, and some people told me this story sounds too good to be true, but it's actually true. And he was sitting there, probably smoking a cigarette, and then the bar tender put on my record.
Yeah.
And he was intrigued, or he liked it, and he asked who it was. And the record got in that bar through a friend of mine who lives in Berlin.
Yeah.
And she had left it in the bar. And so through her, I was introduced to Christian, who is now my label manager.
I think what's really cool about that is, and I wanted to bring this up to you, is like, that must feel pretty interesting, knowing that your music existed within that setting before anything of like career relevance happened, like,
yeah,
before the progression of the career, that it worked within the real world and actually moved people.
Like, yeah,
even if it was in prison, like, that must feel pretty interesting.
Yeah, well, that's the main aim of the game, obviously. I mean, you want to do this to move people or to communicate. I've tried music all my life, and I've had bands where we would play, and I would feel that the audience didn't really respond to what we were doing, and then you start questioning yourself, like, why am I doing this? Like, is this just my hobby? Is it for fun, or do you really want to establish some form of communication with an audience? And that was for me a very important starting point when I had left my studio. I have a little studio, and I didn't find any time anymore with family life and a busy job to explore electronics or production and basically finding my own voice. And I turned to the piano because that was the one instrument at home that I could still find moments, usually at night, to try to express myself.
Yeah.
And then you have 88 keys, and you know, you question yourself, what do you want to do? What should the music be like? And a lot of the music, like I said before, just came out. But I did try to find something that I hoped would have a bit of a universal appeal, in order to establish a connection between myself and the world outside.
It's very interesting to hear you describe all of that the way you did just now, and especially of having lived with your records, the first and the second, quite a bit, and knowing your story. I mean, naturally, it just feels like, and it's kind of expounded on this as well, about like how the idea of pursuing a career in music, this wasn't the intent with this album. So what does it feel like knowing that this is the album that's done this for you? Does it make it feel, going back to the first record specifically, does it make it feel a little closer to you? Is there almost like a sense of surprise that this is kind of what, and I mean, it's two questions in that. Like, are you surprised? And also, what was it that made you go that route to allow yourself to pursue a career when it wasn't your aim?
Obviously, it was a surprise because at one point I set out with like a hope to be able to reach people with my music, and that was with people I meant my direct surroundings, like friends,
immediate friends,
people I knew through work. I was working in advertising in a music agency, but not making music, and I felt I had so much to say, or on a deeper level, that it would feel great if I would have a chance for them to understand me a bit better through my music. Once it got picked up and more people expressed that they were tuning into it, I just went with the flow. I was like, okay, this is a fantastic opportunity, and I kept my work. But I also, it felt so rewarding to have this connection, and obviously you don't want to let go of that if you have that opportunity. So I kept basically glued to the piano because I was scared that what happened with the first record was like a moment of sheer inspiration, and it was hardly me part of the process. It was something that, you know, I don't know, happened for me at that particular time. So I wanted to continue that, and I kept on writing, and I think once you've opened yourself up to that opportunity, and you kind of feel deeply inside what it means, then you look at things differently, and you're not really thinking about, okay, I have to strategically plan this career. It's more like you go to that place where the music initially came from, and you try to harvest that place, and you try to keep going as long as you're able to reach that particular place. And that's for me the main mindset, not to lose that, and you know, keep grounded and sane, and do smart things in order to obviously try to prolong this blissful period of time. But yeah, I think I might have answered your question already.
No, you definitely did. You did. You know, I promise we'll be going a bit further, but I do want to go, I still want to talk about the past a bit, specifically going into the fact of how you talked about how the album was made, how it was made within a time where you found yourself retreating to the piano and finding a form of escapism. Yeah. I wonder if within that time you knew it was an album you were making. Like, did you know that you were crafting a body of work, or?
At one point I did, and there's two or three steps that went before. First was a realization that the piano playing I was doing before, which was more jazz related, wasn't really affecting me personally, and also not very much affecting the world outside. So I had already decided or tried for since 2012 or 13, if I was playing the piano, that I would start leaving out notes and leaving out things that wouldn't have any relevance to me. And then this point I just mentioned, when I took a break from work, the day I called my boss and said I think I need a bit of a pause, the next morning the family was in the room and I started playing, and then this composition just presented itself, which is called Saturday Morning. And I was like, whoa, what is this? So then I started to realize that I'd found a vocabulary, probably is the right word, to express myself, which felt really nice. And then another thing happened during that time. A colleague and good friend of mine was killed during South by Southwest. There was a guy running from the police, and he drove into the audience at the South by Southwest festival.
I remember that.
And basically, the last guy that he hit was my friend Steven. And I wrote a piece for him because I didn't know another way of expressing what I felt about that.
Sorry for your loss.
Yeah, well, yeah, it was absolutely. It was so bizarre. The guy was super young, just had a kid, and was full alive and very energetic, very positive. And he just got taken out, which for me, but also a lot of people around him, that was like a huge wake-up call. I wrote the piece, and I played the piece at his farewell ceremony, for lack of a better word. And then his family asked me to record it. And that was the trigger, like, okay, I had this happen, I had that happen. And he just was ripped out of life, and I felt this strong urge to do something with my own life. And then I decided to get rid of all the doubt and fear, and I basically started recording this, and then one piece came after another, like super quickly. I was especially when Rai, my
people tend to refer to him as a creative director.
Well, yeah, he's definitely a creative director. He's also a bit of a mentor, and he's
a bit of a wizard.
He's a magician. And
for people who might be unfamiliar, he is a prominent photographer in Holland who is probably one of the most eccentric human beings anyone could ever hope to meet, but an immensely beautifully talented individual as well.
Yes, that's correct. By sheer luck, had an instance around 2011 where he was commissioned to do a photograph of me for some advertising yearbook thing, where I met him for the first time, and I was really blown away by his energy and the way he approached what he was doing, and he approached me, and he made the official picture that he was commissioned to do, but he also made one or two on the side that he had sent me a couple of months later. Like, oh, by the way, this is what I did. And that pic, that image completely captured my inside for the first time. And I was like, wow, this guy totally gets me. So I reached out to him when I had my album pretty much finished, if I could use that picture. And he didn't respond, and he didn't respond. And by now he was already, you know, quite famous. And then I sent the music. And then the next day he called me and he said, this is, you can use the picture, but let's do something together. Let's make something new. And when that happened, I knew it might be something that would go beyond the family and friends circle. Because he basically said to me, are you crazy? You want to keep this for that small group? You have to send it out in the world, and I'm going to help you.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And especially, like, I mean, obviously he's, more than anything else, he's a human being, but he's also an artist. And to have an artist have that relationship and that response, that must make it feel, I would imagine, 10 times more special.
Definitely. That moment, like, you get response from many people, and I appreciate every reaction I get, but if someone that's pretty profound in the way he seems to look at the world, takes a liking in your work, that feels like a compliment is not the right word, but it's reassuring or affirming.
Yeah, exactly. I want to go into your second album a bit, Apprehension. I have a couple things to ask you about it. The first thing, I'm curious because it's been quite a bit since the first album came out, or even a little bit since the second came out, and I'm curious, what do you feel your second album says about you that the first one doesn't or couldn't?
I think the second album says a lot less about me than the first album. The first album is like a very individual. It's me being completely naked and trying to naked and like, okay, I have nothing to lose, and I want to reconnect with myself, or I want to find something within myself that I can trust, something to hold on to, and. It's basically, that was it. It was me wanting to come out of the self-created isolation or alienation that I had in my head with the people around me and with reality at large. And so it was super personal. It was like a personal attempt to connect to humans. And in doing so, find a level of trust that would make me more positive and more hopeful towards humankind, myself, and our future. And
that's a tall order.
It was. I've called it an experiment because it's basically, you know, you want to. It's not like my. It wasn't set out as an ambition or something like, okay, I'm gonna. This is what I want to do because that's important. It's more like, I needed to find something to I'm going to use the word again, but to really establish a connection again. And you can try it and do it with words, but then either you write a book or you do, like, I don't know, hundreds of conversations that will probably have to last for at least an hour and are super intense. And music is so much more powerful to express that level of feeling or thoughts that are very difficult to express in words.
That's very true. What would you say, I mean, obviously, that you kind of answer what I'm about to ask you next, but I kind of want to expand a bit more into it. Yeah. I wonder what's a major difference between how you approach making the second album to the first album? Like, something that was a very big difference for you?
The biggest difference is that with the first album, I didn't have anything to lose. And I was hardly part in the making of that. It just kind of happened. I don't know, everything that came out I sort of accepted right away, and with the second one, obviously there's you know, more people are aware of it, so there's a higher level of expectation maybe, and you have the not reassurance, but affirmation is probably the right word, from the outside world, that they look to you as, you know, we kind of see you as an artist now or as a composer now. So then all of a sudden, you know, that has a bit of an impact on how you approach the creative process. And so what I did was basically try to go back or stay within the place that the first music came from. So it's more about I created the circumstances for it to continue. And in hindsight, I did the same as with the first record. I just accepted what came out and tried to make sense of it. And I realized that I had zoomed out. So where the first one was very naked and individual, the second one was, there was more space. Also more notes, and it was, for me, it's not as profound an album as the first one, but it was, yeah, it really felt like I zoomed out, and that's also why I named it Prehension, and where the first one is called Solipsism, which is about, you know, the only reality that you can be sure of is the one in your own head, basically. It's a very old philosophical idea, which I don't think was ever taken really seriously, but it's an interesting thought, especially in times where reality seems to be so far away from what you feel inside is right. And with Prehension, I zoomed out and I thought, well, if that one is about me, then maybe this one be about the group or us, and how we interpret and react to reality.
Wow. You know, your music has been described as being contemplative, and I'm curious, like, what does it mean to you when you hear that description? Does it mean anything to you?
Yeah, it does. I think, practically speaking, it's music that helps you block out the outside world and helps you concentrate or helps you think. In some cases, it might trigger memories or it might trigger stories in your head. I think it creates a bubble for us, for you, for me, to be alone and to think. And I think that's, in a way, contemplation. I didn't per se intend it to be that way. It was what I needed when it happened. So it's just my personal experience that luckily seems to be shared with other people.
You know, hearing you say that makes me wonder, like, how do you take in music yourself? Like, when you're listening to music for leisure, what kind of state of mind do you tend to find yourself in? I mean, obviously it varies, but I wonder if there tends to be quite a way you take the sounds in.
Yeah, I mean that really changed over time, and I think you listen to the music that probably amplifies your mood or your mindset at the time. And if you're young, you probably have too much energy, and music helps you let go of that energy and pumps you up to to dance and to sing and to go out. And growing older, you know, you need more time to pause. And also, I think on a more meaningful level, you have music that has a soul, that has something in there that, again, makes you feel connected to life, or maybe even the universe. It's profound. And if you can sense that, then it alters your mind state, and it opens doors to bigger feelings.
I'm curious, as a composer, when you listen to other artists, do you find yourself breaking their music? I mean, this is an interesting way of asking this, but do you feel like, because of what you do, it's kind of innate for you to break other people's music apart, kind of deconstructing it in your head of sorts?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, there's. I always, especially with live gigs, I have like three levels of amazement, and
at least that's amazement.
Well, yeah, usually it is amazement. I mean, I always appreciate, unless it's really shitty, but you can enjoy music on these three levels. And the most important one is, does it affect you? Does it really change how you feel? And does it, you know? So that would probably make it relevant. Is it relevant? The second level would be, how is it constructed? How is it composed, produced, you know, how's the mix? Is there a lot of depth? Is there a lot of imagination? But you know, you deconstruct it and you appreciate that, or you learn from that. And then the third level would be, how is it performed? Are the people skilled or not? And is that important or not? That's kind of it.
That's good to hear. Well, what has it been like for you to bring this music to life, like within concerts, going into shows specifically? I mean, if I remember correctly, when you made this album, going back to your first album, you never actually envisioned performing it live whatsoever, correct?
Correct. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, no. That was not the intention, and obviously I didn't expect for it to do well, so I never I played it for my friends. I mean, I launched my record and I invited my friends, and I thought that would be it, and I maybe might do another concert, but then
but now you're touring.
But now I'm touring, yeah. And I'm still scared out of my brains.
I mean, well, the reason I really want to go into this a little bit before I let you go, because I'm used to talking to a lot of musicians that are within their 20s or even their 30s, but you're in your 40s.
Yep.
And I mean, I'm curious, like, because you mentioned doing band stuff before, would this be the first time touring for you? Or I imagine touring in a bit.
This project, if you call it that, is the first serious touring, yeah. I've played with bands for audiences, I mean, max 500 people at a festival, but that would mostly be in the Netherlands and a bit in France, and but that was just hobby and fun. So this is definitely more serious.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a bit. I know there's so many different ways that I could ask this or go into, but what's it like touring in your 40s for the first time? I mean, that's amazing.
It's definitely amazing. I think it's very good in the sense that you have a chance to almost reboot your life and start over again, because it's like everything's new. There's a lot of learning involved, which is something, if you're around 40, that's very welcome, because that's when patterns start to kind of slow you down and make you feel comfortable in the world that gets smaller and smaller. Yeah. So it's very healthy. I like traveling, so that's also, I like meeting new people, and I enjoy it very much. But the most important part is that you have an opportunity to experience the concerts with the audience, and that to me is very intense. And like I said, I find it very scary at points. So it's something that makes you feel very alive.
It's interesting to hear you say intense, because my next question was going to be, well, it is. It's, what are you usually feeling when you're performing? Like, because you said intense just now, but I wonder, considering how your music tends to be contemplative, for you as the artist, do you find your own mind going to other places while you're performing?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, no, I'm learning. I'm learning slowly, but in the beginning, my mind was all over the place, and it was really difficult to focus, and now it's getting more easy, but it really depends on the room as well. It depends on the sound of the piano, and on if I get into it and I kind of feel like okay, I'm telling the story in the way I feel I want to tell it, then it's kind of, you become one, and then I'm super focused. But little things will take me out of it, and and I will start to worry about what people think, or I will start thinking about completely other things, and that's very dangerous.
That's true. I'm curious with touring, like, what's a place you've been to that surprised you the most, or a place that's left a mark on you in some way?
I mean, easy answer would be Japan, obviously, because that...
You've been to Japan already?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's massive.
Yeah, and Australia. That was... Melbourne was very special. I played there at the piano recital hall for Melpfest, and the audience was just absolutely amazing. It was like, it was so weird to fly literally to the other side of the globe and have like a room packed with people that a lot of them knew the music, and there was even a guy that had a tattoo of one of my quotes on tattooed on his arm, and that was like the most surreal experience. That and Funkhaus in Berlin was also really because of the acoustics mostly, and Niels Fram lent me.
I was going to bring up that's Niels Fram, room.
He lent me his piano.
Wow! So I just saw him last week, and my mind is still at another place from that.
Yeah, the guy is fantastic.
Yeah,
it was such an honor to we got to hang out with him and his friends afterwards. So that was super special.
That's really wicked, man.
Yeah.
I only have a couple more questions for you, but you know, thanks for taking the time today. It's been a true pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you for coming out and spending time with me.
Yeah, of course.
Appreciate
it. You know, it's one thing to have people react to your music, but also to have the reaction of a very specific group, the people who work within the world of classical music. You brought up before that, you know, you don't know if you'd consider your music classical, but for some reason people do quite put that descriptor on it. I wonder, what has it been like to get attention from that world of classical musicians? Mm-hmm. And has the reaction from people within that world been positive or the opposite?
I would say the opposite. Yeah. I would definitely say the opposite, and it's
previously for people listening, because I'm obviously reading off a list of questions. Before I did have negative there, but I remember when I was writing this, I was like, I think I'll put opposite. That's probably a bit better.
Yeah, no, I've had it's not that bad actually, because I've had some negative response, mostly from very critical music journalists saying that I was just a child playing a piano and. That it was all a big joke and probably all marketing and stuff
all marketing.
Yeah, I've had comments, and like the story I've told from Christian in the bar or all the other stories. I mean, I like to tell the stories because they show what actually happened.
They give context,
and then. And then you can be all cool and decide, well, I'm not going to tell anything of that, and I'm just going to play, and it should be just about the music. But I think it's definitely more about, you know, the story, and what that could mean for people. I mean, the thing I underestimated was, and I really didn't think about that, which is. Not that I care that much, but it was signing with Deutsche Grammophon, which obviously is the institution in classical music, or one of the biggest institutions in classical music, which automatically means that if you release something, you will get the core classic people, journalists, writing about the music. And for them, my music is just a very sad version of Satie or Chopin or Monpou or... and if you look at it from their point of view, they're absolutely right.
It's also very narrow, though, of a way to look at
it. It's kind of like what that implies is that this music has no reasons of existence. Right? That if you look at it from that angle, all new things should be put on the same measurement, and then it's really difficult to do something anew, because the most beautiful, brilliant music has been written in the past. That to me is not the point. The point is basically that you do what feels right within this particular moment in time, and it's an expression. And for me, I never had the pretension that I would be a classical pianist. I don't want to be in that world because I will never survive in that world. I just want to stay, you know, on the nice side, on our side, where I can make what I want to make and what I feel, and people resonate, respond to it or not. And yeah.
Yes. You know, this reminds me of one of the bands I work with a bit is the Canadian band Metric. And the guitarist Jimmy went to Juilliard studying classical music, and he was very much under the mindset that I will study in Juilliard and I will be like a chamber musician or something like that.
Yeah.
And within that world, he realized how restrictive it was, and like the thing that made him form a band such as Metric, like an indie rock band, was in direct opposition of that world. Yeah. It was very much like, well, I thought I want this, but I actually want... Because it's such a narrow spectrum that for you, for example, I mean, to play shows and have them be sold out, to have people respond to the way they are, I imagine for you it's very validating and affirming, and seeing this classical world and saying like, well, they're saying this about me, but obviously something's working if people are actually getting out of their houses to come see me.
Yeah, but that's already saying that it has a strong impact what other people negatively are saying. And I think if... You know, if you, it's a tricky field. But if you really try to stay close to the truth, and do what feels right, then it doesn't really affect you what other people say or might say about it. I do want to stress that I completely understand, and I'm also very. I try to be very humble about this, because I've seen students go through absolute military training and become insanely good at performing and understanding music, which I admire a lot, and I have a lot of training and learning to do to get to that point, which I'll probably never reach because I'm too old. But it's kind of like, you know, it's a bit unfair that this chance is given to me and not to them, because they worked really hard for it to master the instrument.
Yeah.
I'd say my merits are probably that I like I said before, that I sort of didn't give up and managed to create the circumstances for this to happen.
Yeah, and also goes into creativity in general, and just the matter of being a human, where you could be stood next to someone who might be just as or more qualified as you.
Yeah.
But even though you're intrinsically going for the same goal, the fact that you're different people means you will approach it differently. So there's something to that as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, before I let you go, I wanted to... We talked about this before I hit the recorder, but Holland is a place that I love quite dearly, your home. I'm curious, if you feel that your music is at all inspired from where you're from, and if so, what do you feel your music says about your home? Not necessarily your home country, because that's quite broad and almost quite American of me to ask, but I'm curious, like, what you feel that your music says about your surroundings, if it says anything.
I don't know if it has a strong connection to... I could forcefully attempt to find some half-ass explanations I don't know. Maybe we're kind of like direct people, and we've had this outwards look for years and years, for centuries, to the rest of the world. We've been going out into the world for worse and better and for worse, however you want to express that, and I think that helps to have like a very open relationship with the world, and
it's healthy.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, Amsterdam is packed with people from all over the world, and it feels like a global village, which. You know, which makes the threshold of the idea of going out and express yourself to the world somewhat easier. But that said, that's probably for someone from London or New York even 10 times or 100 times better, because we also have a very Calvinistic way of looking at the world, and we have a saying in the Netherlands that you shouldn't act beyond your normal self, because that will draw too much attention, or you might think that you're better than the rest, which is something that you are definitely punished for in the Netherlands.
But wouldn't you say, I'm curious, because I feel, as someone who's familiar with the Netherlands quite a bit, I feel like that's been changing a bit, or at least with younger people, maybe shifting that idea.
I'm not sure. I hope so.
Yeah. I mean, it must be something you're conscious of with having a daughter as well.
Yeah, but they're too young for me to notice whether that's the case or not. I mean, their awareness of the outside world is very limited because of their age and experience. I mean, they've been traveling to faraway places already.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be able to tell. I'm not sure.
Yeah. But, you know, I guess a really beautiful thing too, you know, when you brought up before that you've been to Japan and Melbourne and you're sharing that with me, I mean, that must be quite amazing, especially with your age, knowing you'll be able to share that with your child.
Yeah, that's something I really try to do. And mostly, I think the most important task for me is to make them, to make sure that they don't have too much fear in their beings, and that they are self-conscious enough or confident enough and happy with themselves to express what they want to do. Because I'm lucky that this didn't happen to me 20 years earlier. So it feels like the right moment for me, but I've never, from my upbringing or from the Netherlands, I would say, would have been looking at the clock like, this guy is talking for hours. I'm sorry.
No, it's not that at all. I'm very conscious of the crew around us.
they're used to it.
But you know what's very, before I let you go, what's beautiful what you said just now is that something that I heard a long time ago that I feel is very true, but you kind of challenged this with what you said. I think it's beautiful. I've always heard that the thing that's crazy about, the most annoying thing about success is you never feel like it comes when you're ready for it. You always feel like you're underprepared or overprepared. But what you just said, you feel like success in the aspect of being able to do what you want to do. Because in my opinion, that's the true definition of success. You feel like it came at the right time. That's beautiful.
Yeah, I definitely feel it came at the right time. It's like, I definitely wasn't ready yet. And I mean, it's kind of a vague thing to say, but if, you know, it's very cliche what I'm saying, but everything in your life serves as a preparation for something, and you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, those type of cliches. But in a way, you have, the whole goal is to find your path, and some people know it when they're six and they pursue it, and they don't have any other idea than, this is what I'm doing in life. And for a lot of people, it's completely vague and unclear, and they will, you know, feel maybe like I did, a bit alienated with life, and potentially because they are not walking the path that they are supposed to. And if you really listen to the voice within it, you give it a chance to talk to you, that probably is your talent speaking, and probably might give you the answer to why you're here. And for me, again, someone that got very lucky, it came at a relatively late age. But that makes me also hopefully a bit wiser, and for me it's easier to understand what I think might have happened to me.
I think that's true. Thanks for taking the time to chat with me. I really appreciate it.
Likewise.
Of course.